Can you hear me? All right, we're in business. Thank you guys. I am now doing what's new in Visual Studio again. We're going to repeat the last session. All right, I'm just going to go slower. So this time I'm going to go through what is new in Visual Studio, but from a different way. I'm going to talk a lot about DevOps. Now, I know that I have been talking about ALM for many years, and I'm sorry, that was, forget about all that stuff, not important, all right? It's now DevOps, 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 okay? And Microsoft have been making a lot of investments in this area, and it affects us. How many people at work talk to their bosses and think about improving their ALM maturity? Okay, so there's a good, 20% of you. How many people here are starting to hear the word DevOps and thinking about that? Wow, 80%, that's a lot. Inside Microsoft, it is a topic of conversation everywhere. It's their favorite thing. They will try to optimize their DevOps experience ordering coffees. And I guess it's, to me, it's a bit of a mystery because when you think about ALM, it really did include DevOps, didn't it? Like, it was part of the life cycle, but it was very developer-focused. DevOps, who's got a great definition of DevOps? Huh? Say again?
Donovan Brown.
Donovan Brown. Oh, he's the, that's the definition, Donovan Brown. Okay. Oh, he's got a good definition. Do you remember it? I'll go to his session. Right. Well, the prerequisite to going to Don, is it on now? Maybe we could go right now and check. So, Donovan Brown, he loves talking about DevOps. That's his favorite topic. But I think one of the major differences when you talk, oh, by the way, I should tell you, maybe Donovan Brown has a definition, but lots of people have their own definitions. In fact, I've spoken to a lot of people who in their job title and in their business card, it says DevOps, which I find interesting that it's in their job title. But they all have very different, like I have asked them, what is DevOps? Because I'm curious to know what they think it is. And everybody has quite a different definition at this time. So it's quite early on. I think this part is still maturing. But definitely there is a focus towards the business, towards numbers, towards ALM, I think, was seen a lot as, well, it's what the developers do. They optimize their own cycle, whatever they do. But DevOps things affect me, the manager, a lot, and I care about those issues. So, I kind of think some people think it's the secret to eternal dev happiness, but it's really about your business and why your business needs good DevOps. So this is me. One of my claims to fame, I wonder if this will work. I've got a few tabs open. I was the first person to crash a Tesla. Okay? So I got a Tesla and I crashed it. And then I put this picture on Twitter, because my wife doesn't use Twitter or Facebook. But somehow she found out about this pretty quick. And then she asked me, it's April Fool's today, is this a joke? I said, no, it's no joke. Because you're allowed to lie on April Fool's, aren't you? And she was upset because it didn't have insurance. And I knew that it didn't have insurance. That's why I did the joke. And this is fine photoshopping skills. I actually even got a call from Tesla in America on my mobile. So I thought that was pretty cool. I wondered what was wrong with their DevOps. Couldn't they look inside the telemetry, like this car does everything, records everything. And why couldn't they just double check and see whether it really impacted anything? Anyway, that's my claim to fame. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk through shipping software, how we've been shipping software today. And I want to talk a little bit about the history of that. And then I want to talk about kind of the way, this is kind of not the authoritative DevOps story. And I'm going to go through some features. The authoritative one is Donovan Brown. So anything I say, don't worry, just listen to Donovan. But I'm going to give you my own take on this. So I'll go through the four stages, and then I'm going to talk about how the tools slot into those four stages. Now, really, a lot of what I say is BS, because Peter just reminded me. You told us to use Knockout last time you came to present. Yes, I know. That was because we wanted a competitive advantage in Australia. I didn't tell any of the Australians. I said, go Angular all the way. I told all the Kiwis to go Knockout. So be aware that some of the things I say might be wrong. And really, even though I kind of think in terms of like levels of maturity in terms of teams, because I think about this a lot, every team is different, so you probably don't want to do it exactly the way I'm going to describe it, but this is kind of the way I think through it. All right, so yesterday, in the old days, we had developers, testers, business analysts. We develop over 6 to 12 month life cycles, and we shipped software, not all the time. And we had cancelled projects. What was this called? Waterfall. Okay. How many people are still on Waterfall here in their company? Oh, there's quite a few. Okay. You guys need to find new jobs. Okay. All right. Anyway, today, everybody else but you six are shipping software to production quicker than that. And we have teams like developers, and we have a product owner in the team, and we have a scrum master, and we are doing work generally in a two-week sprint. And we're shipping software each two weeks. And often many teams are getting this down a bit better. You're having daily stand-up meetings, you're doing sprint planning, you're doing a sprint review, and then you're having a retrospective where we feel nice and we get to say what's good and what's not so good. Okay. And then they keep doing the same terrible behavior anyway, but at least we get to say it. And we're focused on the product increment, and we're focused on shipping. And in fact, when you think about it, this goes round in circles. And in fact, one of the problems are we've got more and more Scrum teams, and often many Scrum teams on one product. How many people have more than one Scrum team developing on the same code base, one product type thing? Wow, that is half the room dealing with Scrum of Scrums or that thing. And out of curiosity, how many people are looking into Safe, using or looking into Safe? Safe, no? One. Well, that's huge in New Zealand. All right. What about how many people are looking into scaled Scrum from scrum.org, which is called Nexus? Zero. All right. Forget about it. All right. But that is kind of the next wave, how we make all these Scrum teams work together. And obviously, this is very early days, and it hasn't even made it to New Zealand yet. So I talked to you about this before, and I released this poster, I think, in 2001. It's been one of the most popular downloads on our website, and I gave you guys a copy just before. But that's kind of where we were a little while ago. This is different to what we are today. So what does Scrum solve? What does Scrum solve for you guys? Did Scrum solve anything? Yes, sir. Louder. Right. So he said it's pulled us closer together. He's a very touchy-feely, emotional type of guy. Right, okay. Anyone else? Increased visibility for the bosses. Yep. Louder. Less things developed that you don't need because you're working on the most important thing. Anything else?
Quicker failure, quicker success.
Quicker success. That's a very important point because Scrum does not solve, make all projects work well. Does not. There's always bad product owners. There is never bad developers. And you get to fail quicker. All right? So, which is probably better, isn't it? Wouldn't you prefer to have a car crash quicker than slowly? All right. So solve communication with clients, got developers and testers together. That was one of the main, throwing things over to the testing team. Okay. Most of that has been solved in most companies. So that we now know how longer, I couldn't believe I found this photo of this guy throwing this poor thing out. But anyway, solve the problem of throwing to testers over the fence. I need an analogy for you guys. And if you think about your customers, I know we're developers, but what do you think the customers care about all this? Which feature do you think they care about in all this? Shipping software, you're right. That's all they care about, and that's what DevOps cares about. So this is the traditional approach now. We are now in this world where we get the specs. That's very funny, yes. I thought I had to put sheep there to make you guys laugh, but obviously not. So this is how we work today. We get the specs, we add coffee and pizza, we make software at the end of the sprint, we deploy, we hand it over to the sysadmins, and they deploy it, right? And then we work on the next feature, and then that goes off to the ops team. Okay. It looked like someone I knew. Okay. So, what does he do? He gets a zip of the product, we provision a server, he follows the instructions to deploy, he deploys, and he informs the QA that it's all been deployed, and we wait for the green light to deploy to prod, right? Correct? This is what we're doing today. Okay, so that goes pretty smooth, right? No. Oh, you were all saying yes before. Now, there's one dissenter. Who's that dissenter? Yes, he's got two hands. Anybody else? Who else agrees that that doesn't work like that? No. All right. So here's the real world. Okay, we get the specs, and actually, I'm not making this up. This is exactly our project for PwC. Okay, we don't have, we do development, and we don't know their sysadmins because they exist all around the world, and we just have to do the software. And this is step by step. We add the coffee and pizza, well, I do, and free lunch. Make software at the end of the sprint, usually the last seconds of Friday. They make deployment packages, we hand it over to the sysadmins to deploy. We're off to the pub, or we tell them that we're thinking about the next feature. And then this guy, he still looks the same. We give him a zip on Friday. Arvo, we told him it would be Friday morning, but you know, things don't go like that. It's not our fault, it was the product owner's fault. They're not very clear in their requirements. We provision servers, we follow the developer, he follows the developer instructions, which I think in our case are pretty clear, honestly. Something doesn't work. He tells us something's out of date or missing the instructions. He calls the dev team, no one picks up, he sends an email, something like this. I can't show you the actual emails he sends because he's not fully coherent. Hi devs, your deployment instructions don't work. Please send me updated deployment. Okay, let's translate it. Where he goes to the pub, he will get an email reply from us because it'll take Monday to sort this type of stuff out because it's hard to fix it when we're not familiar with the different environments. We will often have some problem on this new client. This client has 60 different environments and they keep getting new customers with new situations. Get an email on Tuesday with new instructions. Hi, sysadmin, works fine when I follow it. Here's updated instructions for you to follow. Okay, it's not an important detail to mention that there was actually a bug there. Okay, we just made it clear for him. Okay. All right, then we deploy. We hand back to the QA and testers, and this happens with the testers. Because testers are also painful in these. In fact, for this particular client, we're told not to do any testing, that they have a very large team in Malaysia, and they don't want to, our rates, it's not worth doing the testing. And that's their strict instructions. He asks Deb for a patch. He's now cranky, or more cranky. This is buggy. The tester can't even log in. The yellow screen of death usually does something like this. Fix up your stuff and don't give me this crap. Developer wants access to the server because we can't fix this now. We are completely blocked. Sorry with the delay. That's passive aggressive. But it's all working in dev. That really pisses them off. It's currently in the sysadmin's hands now. We're trying to get to the logs to see what the error is. I can't see how it's so hard for those sysadmins to deploy this app. It's, you know, it's lost. No, we're not trying to be rude here. We're just confused. So, redeploy. Wait for the green light to deploy to prod. Okay. So, get another version and, all right. So, repeat for another few iterations and eventually, do you see any problems? Hopefully. So, the developers and the sysadmins are operating independently. We've kind of seen this before with devs and testers. So, it's kind of the old problem just looking different, right? We've got this wall between them. There's a lot of photos of the internet with Kiwis throwing over fences. I don't know why. Okay. Anyway, it worked fine in dev, but it's an ops problem now. All right. So what's the guts of the problem? The guts of the problem is most developers care about shipping, they care about features, and they care about bugs on the test server or environments they can see. You've got devs who want to have high velocity. They look at the story points they're getting per team, per sprint. They love completing PBIs. They love sending the word done. Okay? You've got sysadmins who like uptime. They like stability. They don't like being called at, you know, all hours of the night. It's not a very pleasant job for sysadmins. Okay? Is there any sysadmins in the room? Is there any sysadmins? One, two. Put your hands up if you're a sysadmin. We don't dislike you. One. There was one before. How come you two don't have beards? I don't get that. Did you shave to come to a developer conference? Anyway, all right. So they have conflicting goals, and this has been around for a while, and this is what kind of has caused a lot of chatter about DevOps. So how do we fix the problem? Well, you have developers and operations, you get them to dance together, and it turns into... Does anyone know where this came from? Who knows where it came from? Yes, so a few. Yeah, some Japanese TV show. All right. Anyway, so if you go, Donovan Brown will give you a full definition, and it says on Wikipedia it's a development methodology for collaboration, integration, automation. I don't really consider it a development methodology. Our development methodology is kind of Scrum, well, that's a framework, but I think mainly it's about removing the most painful process, and that's why each company has to have a different... It's never going to be a one-size-fits-all, although I'll try. So then there's automation, and one of the things I agree with the automation, to me, DevOps is a lot about tools. Yeah, they don't mention it here, but I think it is. All right, so the history of DevOps is, well, in 2005, we had ALM being quite popular. In 2008, there was an Agile conference, and these guys, Patrick and Andrew, discuss agile infrastructure, and nothing really happens at that point. But when these Flickr guys discuss that they're deploying Flickr 10 times a day, people are amazed, and it gets enormous notoriety. Is this, first of all, a lot of people thought it was rubbish at first, and it got people thinking. Big companies can really do that type of thing. Then Yahoo bought them. Anyway, we won't mention that. So then they had this conference called DevOps Days, and there's a series of tools that came out, and this DevOps Days went global, and it got a lot of talk outside the Microsoft space. But there's a series of books, and I'm going to encourage you to read The Phoenix Project, but there's other ones, Lean Software Development, Lean Startup. There's a series of different things that got everyone talking about DevOps. And then there was more DevOps in the enterprise with bigger and bigger companies doing it and deploying regularly. And this is a badge of honor and seen as a source of maturity or health with your product if you could deploy it regularly. And Microsoft got serious about DevOps in 2015 after talking about it for a long time internally. And so you can see that the poor little sysadmin has got less popular and the DevOps guys got more popular. You can see ALM, hasn't really increased, but you can see DevOps is getting crazy, crazy popular. All right, so I'm going to talk you through the four stages as I see it. And I'll walk you through it. This isn't the proper explanation, but I'll tell you how I see it. So you've got ALM without DevOps. Most teams I see are here. They've got some basic things, but they're not really doing DevOps. There's other teams that have got everything documented, and they're pretty standard, even if everything isn't automated. Then there's these other teams that are fully automated, and then you've got the teams that are really collecting a lot of stats, heaps of stats on everything. And then stage four is where all the processes are improved. All right, so stage zero, this is what I consider most teams are at. So they've got source code, they've got a product owner, they're doing nice Scrum stuff, they've got a continuous build server, they're doing manual deployment. There's some steps in their process which are manual. How many people are at that point? Okay, well, 60% of the room. So then there's this next step where, you know, he's basically doing the first steps of automation, okay? So you've got one-off scripts, you've got common manual processes, you've got Doco to create an installer, you've got, hey, run this script to deploy to UA staging or production, and you've got Doco you create for release notes, and there's timesheets you have to enter manually, some little manual processes, but it's very systematized. How many people are at that with everything covered in some documentation or scripts you manually run? Okay, so we've got 10% of you at that point. So the next one is automation, where we've gone well past the bike now. We're really at this next stage. And this is the stage we really want to get to. So you've got continuous deployment using Octopus or Release Manager. You've got no more of this, it works on my machine. Ideally you're using Azure, but you can be at this stage with on-premise. And we've got a fair chunk of automated testing in there, so that manual testing is heavily reduced. All right, and there's very little waste in your company at this point. How many people are at this point? That's great. Okay, so we've got less than a quarter of the room, but that's pretty awesome. I didn't expect so many people would be at that point, because this part is hard. This part is hard. You've got to. I should ask, how many people are on Octopus? More than half the room. How many people are on Release Manager? Okay, half of that. All right. Okay. Any others? Roll your own. No. Okay. So let's talk about this. This is when you're doing well. You've got a car involved. And you are logging metrics. This is kind of the real business focus. And you have to have a lot of metrics you're measuring now. You've got visibility into the application. All your errors are logged. You've got reports on all your unhandled exceptions. You've got reports on all performance. I remember being asked once. I remember we were the MVPs were in there asking Brian Harry to put more focus on unit testing. I think, I'm trying to remember, what's that cool unit testing tool that lights up with little green things all over as you press control save and or little red things? Ncrunch, yes. We were asking him to put Ncrunch in the box, like build something like that. Can't you look at that, get some ideas and do the same thing for us? And so it's in the box. And everybody's, as they're working, they'll see red or green and things. And he said, I don't want to invest a lot of time at the moment in, you know, helping more with unit tests, okay? This is well before they did the smart unit tests. And we asked him why, and he said, because I'm building a service. And the service he was building was, well, at the time, it was going to be released as TVS Preview, which is now visualstudio.com. And he said words to the effect that, I'm seeing the value. I've got all these charts that I've manually, you know, cobbled together because I need to know when the service is going down. So many years ago, he was learning about how do I keep this service up? And the way that he was starting to learn about keeping a service up is he had a hell of a lot of charts on a lot of different things. And he didn't really need all the unhandled exceptions. He needed to know whether things were rising or, you know, if performance was relative to what it was before. And when it showed us these spikes and explained, you know, what was behind all these spikes, and he was always analyzing this stuff. And he said, I'm gonna hopefully bring this product to you, which is now App Insights. So you've got all these performance reports, you're deploying, everything that you do is timed, you've got reports on everything, you've got end user usage, you know where they click on every single thing, and you use all, and it doesn't just include this, it includes a whole lot of other things, it includes your Google Analytics. Because when you have an outage, they want you to try to talk to the business, they want you to try to say, well, this outage cost us 10,000 views in the last 24 hours. Plus, if you look at this, you can clearly see it cost us, $20,000 in sales, just that outage. So you try, it doesn't have to come to a dollar figure, but you try to have numbers. So that's App Insights or New Relic or one of those. There's a number of them. I think that what we will be talking about soon is how we get all this stuff into Power BI. And we give our teams and we give our business beautiful dashboards and Power BI. And we'll have a lot of best practice about what reports and what is useful and what is useless, that type of stuff. All right. It also includes a lot of Azure features like, swapping and having no downtime at all, zero downtime on our deployments. And there'll be a series of things. So improving processes is stage four. Now, this is the best stage. Now, I should ask, how many people are at this point? No teams are at this point? Put your hands fully up if you think you're at this. Measuring everything, charts for everything. So three, okay. And what tools are you using? Can you do it louder? You got New Relic and App Insights. Wow, that's like having two wives. Okay. Say again. Insights. Oh, application insights. Sorry, it's your accent. You've got a weird accent. All right. Okay. All right. So you need those tools. Are you guys on Azure? Yes. Oh, I understood that one. Good. Yes. They're on Azure. It is a lot easier to do on Azure. And I can tell you that I talked before about PwC and that painful deployment. That is not actually PwC. That is their clients that we're deploying to who have painful processes because they're big companies and very locked down. And they're certainly not going to let us get to those production servers. But there is a few of them that are on Azure. And those ones have had zero problems. Okay, so much so that they are now, I think they wish they had have only allowed clients to go with Azure, but that now it is in their initial sales cycle that basically they almost force it, the clients to go with Azure because it's so much more painful the other way. Anyway, so here's some examples, and I'll just run through some examples. So we've got this feature X. It's not a key area of the app, but we're seeing that it's used by 80% of the users. So we're getting information like that, and now that's our decision to spend some additional time to polish a feature we don't think is important. Provisioning and deploying to servers is taking an hour of downtime affecting 500 users. So we need to buy more hardware or identify bottlenecks. But each of these decisions has stats behind them and showing. Timesheets are taking half an hour. It's all being measured. It's not us guessing. It's 15 hours a week. Let's see if we can automate this through check-in comments. It's looking for whatever pain you have in your organization. This is the guts of it. Reducing damage from bad deployments. Let's find a way where we can beta test features. Plus, let's see if we can have a bad deployment affect only 20% of the users. Because here's the thing, when you're deploying more often, you're kind of got more, you're certainly not able to check rollback procedures as easily. And you get one thing in life, you lose another. But one of those things is, we keep rolling forward, but we don't have as much opportunity to keep checking every single one and all the rollback and do a planned rollback. So one of the things that we'd like to start doing is always deploy to a fresh environment. Like I kind of think of bare metal, but it's not bare metal, it's a bare VM, you know, that type of thing. So that's kind of where we want to get to, because we don't want to deploy over the top of the last deployment with, you know, extra thing, crap on that machine, you know, registry or whatever, files. Okay, so that's kind of where you want to get to. So I'm going to walk through those four stages with the tools that would support it. Okay, so the first stage is, you know, I think we're already there. It's just turning on this thing continuous. So you go into your build, you press trigger, and you go continuous integration. And getting a Scrum Master. That's kind of where most of you solve that pretty easily. Stage one is having documentation for all those steps that you have manually, and going through that. And then you've got to look at how you're going to be deploying, an on-premise or deploying to Azure. And on-premise, we want repeatability. So you're either going to have Git and TFS build and continuous deployment to Azure, or you're going to have Git, TFS build and release management, or you're going to have Git, TFS build and Octopus deploy. I should ask, how many people are on the first one? Who's on the first one? So deploying to Azure. Five. How many people are on the second one using release manager? 10. How many people are on the last one? Okay, well, 60% of the room. Okay, good. All right, so in the future, we'll be talking about Azure Service Fabric and Docker containers. This is coming, and this is what we'll be testing in at that point. But up till now, we want to have this part nailed. So deploying on-premise is good. Obviously, Azure means that we don't have to have a sysadmin involved, but with on-premise, that's not going to be the case. You need something like Octopus Deploy or Release Manager, and this is the process where this works. So you've got Octopus, you've got tentacles on each server, and the sysadmin is bugged once in the beginning, and you never need to bug him again. So you have the developer over here, he checks in code to the TFS build server, that creates a NuGet package and pushes it up to the Octopus server. The Octopus server automatically sends it out to the staging environment for the testers to test. And then usually most companies will have a button that manually pushes to production. That's the common scenario, right? So this is the UI that you might see. And this is the one that we usually set up for most clients. And you look at this and you can see that is the current production version. The most recent ones are new records at the top. Okay, so this is the most recent one, but this is not in production. If we wanted to see what is the most recent one that had a successful deployment, is this one. So that's newer than that, and we look at that. If we wanted to get to that, we click this button and we deploy to prod. It's as simple as that. And obviously the developers shouldn't be doing this. The product owners should be hitting this button. Okay, we don't want to be doing that. All right, so how do we do a rollback? Well, if you have a yellow screen of death on a staging server, you open up Visual Studio, you click in here, and you find it, and you roll back the entire change set, right? Right? You have to check in, right? No. You don't do it like that, okay? Real men roll forward, okay? new quote, okay. So we don't do what we just did then. What we do is we come in here and you roll back to a prior version of staging. When I say roll back, you're not really rolling back. You're rolling back to a... You're rolling forward to an old version. How do you describe that? You're re-rolling. Did you just make that up? Oh, yes. Re-rolling. Okay. Okay, a new term, tweet that, re-rolling. You want to patent it very quick. Okay, so that's kind of how this works. So what about automatic rollbacks? Okay, now you don't want to have, it's a poor sheep. Now, some people have advertised or promoted the idea of you have more checks in your DevOps process, and if you get a yellow screen of death, you automatically roll back and that's kind of solved. I'm going to tell you that I think that will end up being seen as an extremely bad practice, It's one of our holes that we shouldn't fix that way, especially if there's schema changes. That would be a bad idea. It might sound good, but you'll end up like that. Okay. Anyway, the way you roll back is you go back, I would say manually, choose the prior version, you redeploy, you don't recompile any code, and you go forward. Now, that is with Octopus. If you are doing it with Azure, it's different, okay? Now, we've got an old portal and a new portal. The old portal is called manage.windows Azure, and the new one is called portal. Now, do you want me to do this demo on the old portal or new portal? New. Who wants old? One person. The sysadmin. There he is. Okay. Who wants to do it on the new? All right, everyone. All right, let's do it on the new. So there's all these blades, and you come in here, and the first thing you got to do is set up continuous deployment. You click on this guy, and a blade pops over. Then you click on this guy, and then you click on this guy, Visual Studio Online, and then you come in here, and you need to configure your team project. You click on this guy, and you see, use an existing project, no projects available. What do you do here? You call the sysadmin. Sysadmin up there, what do I do now? Because I can't, what do I do? I can use an existing, I haven't got one. I want to use a new one. Sysadmins think they're smart, don't they? What is it? What's the answer now? All right, anybody else can answer. Does anyone actually know what you do at this point? You go for a beer. Yeah, you get frustrated, especially if there's a lot of pressure on, and you go for a beer. Does anybody, can anyone actually solve this problem? Huh? What's the top option? No, it's not the top option. Go to the old portal. Yes, you're right. So you go to the old portal. All right. So you go into the old portal. You click on Integrate Source Control. You come through here, you click on Visual Studio Online. You enter that. You come through, you accept that. You enter your project. Go forward. And now, at that point in time, we have now set it up. So every single time, we don't need to talk to a sysadmin. Every check-in will be deployed to production. Okay? Is that cool? Yes. That's cool. That's more than awesome. That was much easier than any other environment. Apart from, obviously, that's a one-time thing. You'll have to go to the old portal, but that will be sorted soon, and you'll be able to do that in the new portal soon. So I would call that complete Kiwi automation. Okay, ride on lawnmowers. This is a great idea. I didn't know you guys use sheep like this. It's very good. All right. All right, so that's automation. So we need to automate our manual tests at this point in time. This part is kind of hard. But you need Selenium or Code UI Test or however you do it. Chutzpah is another one. But you need to sort this one out. And at that point in time, stage two is sorted, if you can get those bits in order. So the next part is stage three, and that's the logging and the metrics. All right, so logging and the metrics. You basically want to aim for portals like this. And as I said before, I think this will end up they've all got their own type of graphs, but I think in the end we will want more control over it and we'll end up in Power BI. That's my prediction. I've been wrong before. Remember my everybody go knockout one? But that's what I think at the moment. So you need logging and metrics, and there's lots of these things. How many people are using Elma? Quite a few. Okay, quarter of the room. SiriLog? Just a few. Raygun? Anyway, there's lots of these things. And we've got Application Insights and New Relic. And there's also another one called Stackify. There's lots of these guys. In fact, that guy's got two. Have you got Stackify now? Yeah, he's going to add Stackify too. This guy has a lot of data. Okay. Got a lot of cameras in your house? I had to install a camera in my house recently. Not for my wife. I had to install a camera because we have a neighbor that keeps poisoning my tree. And so I put a camera and my tree stopped being poisoned. Yeah. They're the problems in Sydney. People don't like trees. They're anti-trees, not very green. All right. So you need to also get lots of feedback. So we're getting feedback with lots of stats. We want to get lots of feedback. And one of the things that they're going, that I guess we will start talking about more and more, is trying to get a sysadmin in our team. I know, look, I can see a lot of horrified faces, but we want to put a sysadmin in our scrum team, okay? We include him in sprint plan. Many of them are quite, you know, if they're loosened up, they're quite talkative. Okay, so you get them in because you want to know in the very beginning what infrastructure tasks are. We used to think about how we're going to build stuff in the first sprint. Now we need to know how we're going to be deploying things from the first sprint. We want them to be helping us with roadblocks. Now, I think what will end up happening is you end up with a part-time, you know, sysadmin in your teams or some other ways. But basically this scrum, we're breaking down that extra wall of the sysadmin. We'll include them in reviews and retros. Okay, this is going to be very interesting to get them to be, you know, touchy-feely, or what was that expression that you used up there? But yes, we're going to have to do that. So, all right, and obviously we're going to be spinning up VMs on the fly for QA. So we want testers involved. So we'll be turning as many manual tests into automated tests. We'll be using Test Manager, Selenium, Hutzpah. And we also want user feedback. And that'll be from user voice. And this whole, when I asked the DevOps guy from Domain and Sydney Morning Herald are a major company in Sydney that are doing a lot of DevOps, and they're very transparent with what they're doing. They regard this part, the whole ticketing support stuff, as part of their DevOps thing as well. So, you know, part of TFS can be solved with putting user voice in there and having user voice tickets go back and needing that there's an integration piece that you can put in. That part needs to be there. Zendesk is another thing, but basically everything ending up with a URL. So this is just user voice, and that is going to be part of your DevOps lifecycle. So even though you've got all these tools, like Application Insights and New Relic, most of them are very good at kind of reporting. They're very good at reporting on your, how would I describe it? They're good at showing you there's a problem, but grouping the exceptions and getting down is not as easy. That's why you end up with tools like Raygun, and look, Raygun is actually a Kiwi product. See, I'm not even against all Kiwis. And one of the things I like about Raygun, because you can get this from, you can get some of their stuff in Application Insights and New Relic, but they have like a 7-day policy for the basic version. These guys have their data retention for 180 days. It's a big difference, especially if when a bug that you fix comes back, Raygun knows about it, and you can reopen the original case. I think that's good. The bad thing is they don't have a free tier. The other guys have a free tier. That's something that you should tell them. Okay, they should give us a free tier. They're about $40 a month. Application Insights is about $40 a month. New Relic is about $120 a month or something. So even if you have Raygun and Application Insights, that's a cheaper, better experience than going with New Relic. Although New Relic is kind of the gold standard as well. I mention this because when I speak in other countries, I know Kiwis have probably heard of Raygun, but outside it's not as popular. So, but they've got 22,000 devs on that in 100 countries, so that's pretty good. And I was told, apparently you can tell them, say Adam Kogan, and you get your 30-day trial for 90 days. It's not actually a free version, is it? It's just extending trial, but better than nothing. All right, anyway, this is the bit I like, because I just don't think Application Insights does it all today. You want this, you want to see the error rate, and you want your group by errors. That's kind of a pretty important part of it. Now, I just want to mention there's some other ones, and all this is evolving sprint by sprint, but Stackify is another one, and it's quite a nice alternative, but I'm not in love with it, and it doesn't have as big a market share as the other guys. There's New Relic, there's your gold standard, and that's pretty good. So you can see the response times here are not very good. You can see, what else can we see? We can see that there's slow transactions here. And actually up here, if you look up here, when you, this is your overall health. If you see this line here getting lower than the green line, there's a problem. So that tells you straight away something is not quite right in the health of this application. This is like an overall graph. Okay, and you can see you're getting server problems here and stuff like that. So that's kind of how you look at this. Application insights, we've got a whole series of rules on how to use that. But I think what's important is it shows the bugs, it shows, it groups all your .NET and JavaScript exceptions. You can live on this. We live on this in most projects. I will just show you. You can look at the errors. One of the things that it's really good at doing is it's quite good at showing you the worst exception. It's harder to find the overnight exception. So you kind of got to go to a little bit of trouble to, because it's not always about fixing the most, the highest exception, the most common exception. It's usually about fixing new exceptions, that are newer regressions. So if you'll look at this and you'll see, hello, what's going on here? You can't do much about object event. You can see that's a .NET exception. You can look down here and see there's JavaScript exceptions here. But kind of the one you'd start with is this one. So you'd click on this guy. Looks like a .NET code error, so it's one that's probably going to be easier to fix. You click on that, you'll see the user's browser session history here. So all telemetry for that user session. You'll see exactly what he's been doing. And you'll be able to replay that. So that's kind of more insight into exceptions that have happened on servers than we've had before. Now, this is for a server you don't have access to, so that's pretty good. All right, you look down there and see what's been going on. I want to tell you about another few things. We deployed a site in Australia, Event Cinemas. I'm not sure, are they here, Event Cinemas? You have them? Okay. And we did that on Sitefinity, and Sitefinity has a large startup cost. These guys, and when I say large, it's about a minute, can be. That was on a prior version. Now they've kind of improved this. But at the time when we did it, it had a 1 minute thing. And they were deploying multiple times a day. And this was causing us a lot of problems, especially when the boss keeps seeing it, because as soon as it happens, he seems to check it regularly. So we were left with deploy less often or learn about Azure deployment slots. So deploying less often is, you know, not deploying during the day would be a good one. That's one way to solve it. So dev, test, production, most of you would be in that. Some companies have dev, test, QA, UAT, staging, pre-prod, prod live. Now, what you kind of want to do is use these Azure deployment slots where you look at one of these guys and you've got, Azure gives you a couple of slots. I think they give you four slots. So you've got this main site. You just want to click make live. So you want to, that's kind of how it works. And the way this works is you set this up. And this is the environment set up. If you look at this, you know that this is set up. Because what you really need is you need your downtime to be zero on deployments, and you need to use this swap button. So you can see this is set up. How do you set this up? It's pretty simple. You come in here, you'll see deployment slots is zero. You click on that guy. You'll come on here and you'll press add slot. And then over here, you'll give it a name and you press OK. And then you'll see this guy. And then you'll see that you have a deployment slot. So now that's set up. So then you use Azure Continuous Deployment to set that up. You'll come in here, do that. Come through here, and we have that set up now. And that's kind of, it's set up so that we've got continuous deployment and we've got Azure swaps. Now, the beauty of this is that 1 minute thing that was happening multiple times a day, which obviously you would only fix once you got your metrics, if you're in a DevOps mindset, is no cold start, and the swap simply switches pointers, and you can roll back by reversing that swap. So it's a pretty important button to have, the swap button. So you know, you get four deployment slots for every production slots. It's on the standard plan of Azure, so most people get it. It is not, scaling is not available for the non-production because they're using the same resources, okay? So that's a fairly important consideration. This is kind of how it works. See how this is grey? I'm kind of trying to show you. This is grey, so this is disabled. This one's alive, this northwind.com. So this is running on production, and this is running on pre-prod. So you just go in there, you click swap, and this one comes alive and that, and there's zero downtime. So that's kind of how that works. It's a very simple concept. People with Azure aren't using it for some reason. Okay, so the deployment slot, what settings are swapped? Well, you can decide, but anyway, the app settings can be configured to stick or to swap, and the connection strings can be configured to stick or to swap as well. There's a whole lot of settings that aren't swapped, but this thing solved that problem. All right, so to configure sticky slot settings, all you have to do is go into here, click this guy, and you will choose which ones you want to stick and which ones you don't want it. Now, the other thing that worth thinking about, and we talked before about feature toggling. Feature toggling is using beta testers. So what we do is we have a new feature. We hide it behind a feature toggle. As an example, when I go to visualstudio.com, I see more features than you see because the team turns on features for all the MVPs. So they basically, it's just a checkbox. That's kind of what you want. You want to have something where you turn on a whole lot of settings. How do you reduce the damage from bad deployments? Because what you can do is use Azure or set up your own environment so that you're deploying to, say, 10% of users or 20% of your users. So there should be never a case these days where you do anything that pulls everybody down. You should only be pulling a small subset down. And the way that you do that is testing in production. So testing in production is very similar to what, it's A-B testing, and Google have been talking about this for a long time. They test pretty much everything in Google. Developers apparently often have very good ideas, and then they try to talk Google management into it, and rather than have a big fight, they say, all right, we'll just A-B test it. And they'll prove that the idea isn't that good. So you get real numbers. So you don't have to use A, B. You can use A, B, C, D, E. You can put a series and see what happens. To a degree, you're using your production users as testers. And I think that it won't be long before it's going to be never acceptable to pull all users down ever. So testing in production is the golden child. You click this guy. You we'll set this for 20% of the traffic and 80% on this one. So then you use the swap feature, et cetera. So we've got 80% on this. This is this one, and this one is this one. Okay, so you just swap them. So using testing in production, you can test which site leads to a decrease in the bounce rate, the greatest increase in dollars, session duration. It's all about finding more and more numbers about everything that you're doing. All right, so making your disaster less of a disaster as well. All right, what if all that stuff that I just showed you is kind of too hard because there's a lot of new concepts there? I guess all you have to do, you can forget about all that stuff that I just told you. You can just use this auto swap. Turn auto swap to on, and every time you deploy, you'll at least solve the thing that I just talked about with event cinemas. We could have solved that by just clicking auto swap. The issue would have never happened. There would have never been downtime. Alrighty. So, how much time do I have? What? I should. 5 minutes. Okay, good. Where's my coffees? Oh, there. They just arrived. Okay. I need 6 people to come up. It's not that frightening. Come on. We got one. We need a couple of girls. Now, I've been told that Kiwis cannot do a Tim Tam Slam. It's not possible. All right, who we got? We need a couple of girls. Want to do Tim Sam Slim? She's frightened. You don't like coffee? Well, you're not a developer, are you? Do you want to do a Tim Sam Slam? Come on. It's black coffee. Well, that's what I asked for. I don't know how good instructions are. There is a great prize, so there's a good purpose in doing this. I have a great prize. Okay, come on, I need a couple more. Come on. Oh, he doesn't do Tim Tams. He does a lot of Tim Tams, he doesn't do coffee. Right, okay, here we go. Now, I know that... she's on a diet. You don't... It's only one Tim... This is sustenance. Young lady, would you like to come? Oh. What is wrong? Oh, it's tea, don't worry about it. Okay, all right. Gee, we need one girl. All right, thank you. Now, I'm going to show you how to do this. Okay, quick. Shake a leg. She doesn't run either. Okay, now I'm just going to give you the instructions. I have been, all Aussies can do this without a problem. So all you got to do is bite a corner and bite the other corner. The opposite, not the whole thing. You won't be able to do it. You need another one? All right, so if you just bite a little one, when you get this, you got to suck it as hard as possible. Now, I've got six here. You got to suck as hard as possible. If you do it right, everybody come up. Now, and then turn around so everyone can see. If you do it right, there you go, sir. You should be able to have the explosion. Okay, it's got to actually explode in your mouth and there won't be a single piece left. So, ready? Yeah, do it super hard. Really hard. He wants the instructions again. Do you want me to write them out? Okay. Put this thing in the coffee with the... This is a straw. It's now a straw. Oh, God. He busted it. That's all right. You won't win the prize. You ready? Go. But I'm seeing you chew, so it didn't work. This guy's... Go hard. Quick. Oh, no, he can't even airlock it because he bit the whole top off. All right. you guys are hopeless. All right. I did have a prize. I had a great prize for them. Crystal reports. But anyway, I'll give you... Here you go. Oh, look at that. Coordinated girls. That's a developer. All right. I have one left. Okay. All right. Cool. All righty. So, all right. Auto swap is done. All right. That's all you need and you'll have magic. The next thing, which is a while away, is constantly refreshing your environment. People are starting to do this in companies, but it hasn't hit mainstream yet, but it will. We had the old school way of SCVMM. We are starting to see more and more popularity with Chef. How many people are investing in a bit of Chef? Okay, so PowerShell is limited to .NET, essentially. And what people are doing, especially now we're doing ASP.NET vNext, the next version of ASP.NET that is in the box in Visual Studio, but not with a go-live license. Sysadmins, we don't care if they deploy it to Linux or Windows machines. We don't care anymore. We don't want to have our scripts limited. So that's why people are investing in Chef. You're using Windows, Azure, and PowerShell, and you know Docker is coming, and we'll all be talking about this because once we've done the rest of our DevOps cycle, this would be the last thing. And essentially, the reason why this is important is if you think about virtual machines, you've got an OS here each time, and this part is really expensive. And these containers are a lot more efficient for machines, heaps more, and that's why we care about this. So start thinking about this. So the server config, devs define what server they want in collaboration in the sprint review meetings and the planning with the sysadmins. They provision the servers they want as part of deployment. The testers also ask for servers to be provisioned and no sysadmin is needed anymore at that point. Now, there's a series of resources out there. The golden child for this whole DevOps story is probably Netflix. They have been extremely successful in their infrastructure and they put it all down to DevOps and they've released a open sourced a whole lot of their stuff. We have a few tools out there. We have something called Health Check and it just basically is a NuGet package. You throw in your solution, it's free, and just put tick, 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 tick on you know all your server-side checkings and we have Link Auditor. So I have one more thing I'm going to tell you about because I've just got a couple minutes to go. Look at my Kiwi sheep, I didn't even get to that. I made this checklist. So I made my favorite things in Visual Studio. It's a PDF, and I walk through some of my favorite things in there. Aren't they great photos? Oh, she's nasty. But if you want this, I have a new way, and I'm obviously in a DevOps mindset. I'm trying to measure data, seeing how popular it is. It's a free download on our website. I have worked out a little way, and I'll just show you this. If you text this, is that a right? That's not a right number. Don't tell me I wrote the number down wrong. I did write the number down. So if you text this, now this is only for rich Kiwis because you're texting Australia. I don't know how expensive that is. And I wrote down the number wrong, but text this number. Pull out your phones, come on. 61 428 479. You can put this through your expenses at work. That's the actual number. Text Visual Studio. Now be aware, when I tried to do this on the stupid iPhone, it put a space there and stuffed it up. But text that and you'll get a reply with, you'll get a reply and basically you'll get an email with this PDF. How cool is that? No, it's just for fun. Anyway, you got it? So, in summary, what did we do? Today, we talked about shipping software to production. We did a little bit of history on where DevOps came from, where we are today. We identified the problems. I talked you through the four stages of DevOps as I see it and the tools to support it. I put the tools in certain stages, but I think that really the order would depend upon the team, but that's kind of how I look at it. So hopefully you got some value from that. I have a poster up there. This was the old Scrum poster, but I've modified this poster so it supports the checklist for DevOps. So I've actually added this part onto the right, and I've updated all the wording to be DevOpsified. So hopefully you got some value out of that. Grab that Visual Studio checklist that I've just told you about. I've put some other resources in the slide, so grab those. Last two things, send a tweet or send me an email, I don't mind. And check out our videos on tv.sSW.com. They're all free. Thank you very much.